When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Charmed, and welcome back to Let Me Ruin Your Life with me, Serena Shahidi. Hello, how are you? I hope you're doing well. I'm doing well. I had a fun night last night. I went to an event. You know me. I love to go to event. I love event. I love attending event. I went to the screening of some new Hulu show. It's a show on Hulu, but it's also, get a load of this, it's also a musical, and they sing. It's about a woman who moves to New York to become a writer, and then she, like, meets an investment banker, and then they fall in love. I feel like I wrote it, minus the falling in love. But it was so much fun to be there. Lin-Manuel was there. I walked right by him. He was not doing the lip bite. Busy Phillips was maybe there. If not, a woman who looked very much like Busy Phillips was in attendance. The guy with the glasses from Search Party was there. I mean, it was star-studded. What is there to say? So it was nice to see a television program like 2 days before it came out on Hulu. Exclusive. Would I recommend that television program? Not especially. Well, here's the thing. A musical in TV form is very weird, especially seeing it in a theater because everybody wants to clap after all the musical numbers, and I am not about that, especially a TV show. That's weird. I don't like that about musicals in general. You have to go to Broadway, to Broadway, and watch a show that's full of songs, and after every song, you gotta clap, clap, clap. I'm not really about that. Imagine if you watched a movie and somebody delivered like a really, like a poignant monologue and you just had to... It gets tiring. Also, I think what bothered me about the show is that the love interest, who's this banker, he's one of those characters that's like, yeah, he's a banker, but he's sweet. He's not like the other bankers. He has normal people feelings. Yeah, right. I mean, yeah, there are people in all sorts of fields who are people and they have emotions and they're nice and they have families and all that kind of stuff. But I don't really want to see a musical about that, about a banker. I wanted him to be like full Patrick Bateman, Trevor from My Year of Rest and Relaxation. Really, that'll give you something to sing about. I wanted to see a horror movie is what I wanted. I don't know what unrealistic expectations they're setting up. By the way, if any, you know, creative young woman wants to move to Manhattan and you think that you're going to develop like a healthy, loving relationship with the first investment banker you meet, honey, you got another thing coming. Best of luck to you. But we're not here to talk about musicals today. We're here to talk about a book. Okay, we're doing a little book club episode, and this is something that's been kind of a long time coming, because I first heard tell of this book forever ago. I found a photo of the cover, I mean years ago, right when the internet was invented, like 2017 or something. I saw a picture of the cover of the book, and it said, "Women Who Date Too Much and Those Who Should Be So Lucky," by Linda Sunshine. And I was so struck and so drawn to this cover. The title, the font, it's pink, it's beautiful. And I saved that photo and I actually used it on a mood board when I was at FIT doing fashion design. Because we would have to, if you're unfamiliar with the process, we would have to make mood boards of like, okay, for this collection, this is the kind of customer that I'm trying to get. And everybody else would do like, okay, this is an upper middle class. They're always upper middle class millennials, by the way. Nobody's designing for anybody else. Not in fashion school and not in real life and in the real industry. It's all about upper middle class millennials. But they would do that and be like, okay, this customer shops at Whole Foods. So here's a picture of Whole Foods. And they live in the West Village. So here's a picture of the West Village. And they do yoga. So, you know, here's a, you know, swatch of a yoga mat taped onto the board. I found myself being a little less practical. And I would kind of get into these niche characters that I made up in my head. And one of them, I wanted to do a collection that was very sensual and romantic and kind of like a campy Valentine's Day thing. So I was like, okay, this girl, she dates a lot. She has many lovers, some European, some regular. She receives many flowers. She eats chocolate in a heart-shaped bed. Like, I was putting pictures of stuff like that in, and then I put a photo of the cover of this book. And there was a night a few weeks ago, I may or may not have been drinking, and I said, you know what? That book I saw forever ago, I bet it's on Thrift Books. So I opened up the Thrift Books app, and I found it, and I purchased it. And we're going to discuss it. Okay, so this is called Women Who Date Too Much and Those Who Should Be So Lucky by Linda Sunshine, a guide for singles in search of significant others. And the back has a little blurb about Linda Sunshine. There's a black and white photo of her. She's gorgeous. She kind of looks like Janice from Friends, who was always my favorite character. I did not really care for those boring six people. I liked Phoebe. I did not like Chandler. He's too sassy. I didn't like Ross. Monica could take her or leave her. Rachel, same thing. Joey was fun, but none of them were Janice. She kind of looks like Janice in this picture, and she's kissing a frog. And it says, Linda Sunshine, her clever wit has landed her funny books on bestseller lists. And she lives in New York City, but she grew up in a really nice part of New Jersey. God, I love this bitch. So this book was published in 1988. It's very Sex and the Single Girl-esque, but this is a bit more modern. But it is also like a guide to dating for single women. And I fell in love with it on the very first page. Let's go to the preface. Let me read this to you. The first paragraph says, it was the afternoon of December 31st. I was sitting at home waiting for my new boyfriend to call. His name wasn't Jim, but that's what I'll call him. And then it has a little one. What's that called when there's a little number and you see the note at the bottom of the page? God, my parents work in publishing. This is awful. Whatever, I just won't call it anything and I hope neither of them are listening. She said his name wasn't Jim, but that's what I'll call him. And at the end of the page, it says his name was Joel Aaron Fargo, 745 East 83rd Street, New York, New York, 10014, age 42, height 6 feet, weight 173. Social security number 15139-9695, shirt size 15.5-34. And that's where I was hooked. I let my favorite, consistently one of my favorite jokes in the world is when somebody's telling a story and they're like, oh, this friend I used to have, let's call her Molly because that's her name. Cracks me up every time. There's nothing funnier than pretending like you're not going to reveal someone's personal information and then proceeding to reveal somebody's personal information. That's everything. Anyway, so she talks about this guy named Jim, this fella she was seeing, and he breaks up with her on New Year's Eve. He leaves her for a girl that he met through a singles ad in New York Mag. Very of the times back then. Not really a thing anymore, and thank God. Can you imagine having to post a singles ad to find somebody? I mean, I guess it's not that different from like a dating app because you're putting yourself out there, you're saying, hello, I'm looking for love. But a singles ad sounds so humiliating because first of all, they know that you paid for it. You can pay for dating apps too, but nobody knows, and nobody should know. And honestly, you shouldn't pay. Unless it's Raya, because that's not about finding love. That's about seeing Michael Che's profile every now and then. But imagine having to put a singles ad out there and you go to, like, your office the next day. Your, like, carpeted office where you work in advertising. And somebody's like, oh, I saw you in the paper. I see you like long romantic walks. Humiliating. But the point of the preface is, now Miss Linda Sunshine herself, she gets to profit off of men like Jim. Men who break up with her on December 31st. So now she doesn't have New Year's plans anymore, which is a hell of a thing to do to a girl. Men who exhibit that kind of cruelty, she can now make money from those stories. So good for her. And isn't that a fabulous part about being creative? Because every bad thing that's ever happened to you, that can be money in the bank. Potentially. Not a lot of money, because creative work doesn't pay well, but it can get you maybe a new cardigan every now and then. Or maybe like a blazer. I don't know why I said cardigan. I'm not a fan of cardigans. Every time I see somebody in a cardigan, I'm like, okay, so you have self-esteem issues, I guess. That's just what it reads as. It's very, like, slouchy, very don't look at me. Some people pull it off. If they do have some confidence and some flair, but a lot of those cardigan wearers do not. And you know exactly what I mean. Anyway, next chapter. Linda Sunshine gets into the history of dating. Of course, it begins with the original courtship, the Garden of Eden, where Adam asks Eve out. Now, I'm not a biblical girl, so this could be entirely accurate, and I would be none the wiser, but, you know, apparently, he asks her out, and she says, let's do lunch, and then she goes to wash her hair. And there are several references to hair washing in this book. Does anybody know, can somebody actually explain to me, what was the obsession with hair washing from, like, the 70s and 80s, people were always talking about washing their hair. Back in the day of, like, the Mary Tyler Moore Show, if somebody were to, maybe kind of an uggo were to ask you out and you didn't want to say, ooh, no thanks, you would say, oh, I'm so sorry, I wish I could, but I simply have to wash my hair. I just have to wash my hair. Which is very insensitive and problematic to lie about, because some of us really do have to wash our hair all the time. Okay, nobody ever speaks up for us. Can we discuss those people who are like, oh, if you just don't wash your hair, if you just start washing your hair once a week, it'll adjust. It'll just stop producing oil. That is not true. I have wasted so much of my life with dirty hair because I trusted those people. I have thrown away years of my life believing in training your hair. That is not real. If you can wash your hair only once a week, that is not because you've trained it. That is just because that's who your hair is. That's what she's about. And that's her story. Some of us have to wash every other day. And don't gaslight me into thinking that I don't. Anyway, the history of dating. Another important introduction to the dating world. The introduction to astrology. An easy way to introduce a little bit of flirtation, you just ask somebody what their sign is, which used to be the way. Now everybody knows too much about astrology, and if you ask for somebody's sign, you can't just be like, oh, you're a Leo, we're compatible. They're going to be like, my Venus is in my fourth house of Virgo and all this other nonsense. You have to have a PhD to figure out whether or not you're compatible, whatever. And then there was the invention of the zipper, a very important part of dating, easy access. You don't need to unlace your corset anymore. You don't need to unbutton 36 buttons. The zipper made things fast and furious. And then comes along, of course, the iconic book that we've read on here, Sex and the Single Girl by Helen Gurley Brown, which, as we know, is a guide to basically dating married men and washing your hair with wool detergent to save money. She also cites a monologue from The Big Chill. Let me get this. All right. They're either married or gay, Meg observes about the men in her life. And if they're not gay, they've just broken up with the most wonderful woman in the world, or they've just broken up with a bitch who looks exactly like me. They're in transition from a monogamous relationship and they just need more space. Or they're tired of space, but they just can't commit. Or they want to commit, but they're afraid to get close. They want to get close, and you don't want to get near them. She goes on to cite the idea that there are so many more single women than single men out there. Which, of course, I believe is a tool of the patriarchy to make women desperate. I don't think that's true at all. Not in my experience. All these types of books, by the way, say that, and then they're like, and part of the problem is so many of these men are gay. And it's like, what about the lesbians? Hello? Are we forgetting about the lesbians? A lot of women are gay. These women are out here kissing each other on the mouth. It's true. People don't want to talk about that. I think probably there's a lot less men who are emotionally available than women who are. Because men, you know them, they will take years to get over a very mild rejection. A woman will be like, I just last week, I found out my boyfriend had cheated on me 300 times over the course of a month. I don't even know how it was possible, but it happened. But you know what? Today, on this day, I am ready and open to love. And a man will be like, well, a girl was rude to me in fourth grade, so now I'm never getting married. You know what I mean? I think that's the problem. There are always plenty of single men, but the quality often leaves much to be desired. Now, Linda says that baby boomers were at quite the disadvantage when it comes to love because they entered their early to mid-20s during the first broadcast of my girl's show, The Mary Tyler Moore Show, which encouraged them, kind of in their prime dating years, to stay at home and watch television. I don't know if that's because they wanted to stay at home and watch Mary Tyler Moore or because that was just the example Mary Tyler Moore was setting, but if I recall from what I've seen from that show, I don't think she dates a ton. I don't really think she like lives in Minneapolis and works at a television station and is very career oriented. Even her name, come on, Mary Tyler Moore. I know that's the actress's name, obviously, but either way, that is a businesswoman's name. Mary Tyler Moore is, that's a Liz Claiborne vibes for sure. A woman by the name of Mary Tyler Moore, that's a broad who wears pinstripes, and we all know it. So, you know, I see why that could discourage people from living their own lives. They gotta watch that on their television sets instead. So you know what? When we talk about baby boomers, when we talk about our parents and our grandparents, let's give them a little bit of grace, because they had to go through that. They had to stay at home and watch television. And that's rough. So she gets into sort of a business plan for dating. That is very important. She notes, if you have to go to the bathroom, do it now. So, you know, go ahead if you must. She recommends that you make a chart. So if anybody wants to open up Microsoft Excel, Google Sheets, whatever it is you use right now, map out when you're most popular month by month. Make a spreadsheet, January through December, count how many dates you've had, blind dates, first dates, married men dated, younger men dated, dating disasters, pickups / one-night stands, affairs, more than one date, relationships, more than two dates. This is to make sure that you're getting out enough. You shouldn't have too many zeros in there, as well as the types of dates. Maybe you're having too many one-night stands, not enough relationships. Maybe you're having too many dating disasters. And figure out when you're most popular month by month. Were you wearing something different? Were you wearing a bandana on your head like Mary Tyler Moore's aggressive friend? Were you doing drugs? Were you frequenting a singles bar? That kind of thing. I actually might do this. This is brilliant. I do wonder sometimes why, sometimes your popularity with whatever gender you're attracted to varies wildly. I always thought it was just based on like when I was ovulating, like it was a pheromones thing, but maybe I should do this and figure out if it's something else. Also, singles bars, Oh my God, I read that and I was like, oh right, singles bars. That used to be a thing. And I Googled why they don't exist anymore. I did not really get an answer, but I did not really care to find an answer because I found out a very important piece of information, which is that singles bars basically started with a certain chain. And I'm going to give you a moment to think, speculate wildly in your mind about what chain that might be that began the singles bar. Wrong, it's TGI Fridays. It's TGI Fridays. Okay? And that's that. Apparently a perfume salesman who lived on the Upper East Side wanted to meet single women. This was in the 60s or something. And back then, men and women, they would only really drink together at home. There wasn't much co-ed drinking outside of the home. Too scandalous, I guess. So, Mr. Perfume, he bought a saloon. He made it a little bit more chic, a little bit more female-friendly, and got a bunch of women on the Upper East Side to go there every night. And then it made its way outside into the suburbs. And now it's a place for, like, parents to tell their kids that they're getting a divorce in front of a plate of onion rings or something. So shout out to TGI Fridays, and thank you for your work. Not that they're really singles bars anymore, but now there's plenty of co-ed drinking. You better believe it. That's when somebody asks, like, what are your hobbies? What do you do for fun? I say, honey, co-ed drinking. Heard of it? So she advises you sad, lonely singles to advertise yourself. Not necessarily in singles ads. She wants you to get a bit more creative. If you drive a car, bumper sticker, single on board. Which isn't a bad idea. I would go so far as to add another bumper sticker that has a picture of you. An attractive picture of you doing some sort of flattering pose. My favorite, if you ever want to look 7 feet tall, you put your hands on your hips. You put one foot in front of the other, you lean on your back foot, and you have somebody sit on the ground and photograph you from below. You put your chin down, it'll make you look like a telephone pole. It's beautiful. The next activity you can do in Microsoft Excel or Google Sheets is a cost per unit date chart. So basically, horizontally, you put the names of the fellas you're dating, Tom, Dick, and Harry. And vertically, you put down everything you're buying to go on those dates. Clothing, makeup, mustache bleach, hair product, condoms, transportation, diet food, Valium and other drugs. God, I'm so mad I missed the Valium days. People talk about being so lucky to be born in this generation because, like, they love iPhone or whatever. I do not love iPhone as much as I would have loved Valium. To be able to watch TikToks, all right, nice. To be able to go to a doctor and be like, my husband is stressing me out, or like, I'm having lesbian thoughts, or whatever it was that you told these doctors, and they would just like hand you Valium. Those were the days. Anyway, you end up with, when you add these numbers up, a total dollar amount for what you've spent going out with Tom, Dick, and Harry separately. And then you divide that by the number of dates you've been on with them, and then you get your cost per unit date. And this is how you find out maybe Tom, Dick, and or Harry is a bit of a financial liability for you. Maybe it isn't quite worth it to be with them, although she does note high cost can be mitigated by expensive gifts and or great sex. So if there's one fella who you've spent a bit too many dollars on mustache bleach for, but he's a little better in other categories, maybe that's worth it. And that's budgeting, baby. That's personal finance right there. Let's get into the next part, how to get a date. Starting with places to meet men, the first is kind of an obvious one, bars. She specifically says bars with television sets because, you know, men like to look at shiny things that are moving and emitting light and making noise. Also, bars with TVs. If you're just going in there, like, by yourself to find a man, then you could just be like, oh, I'm just watching TV. I just love the sports game that's on. I just love to watch sport and drink. And Oh, there's a man coming up to me? Never would have expected that. The next place is a co-op meeting. If you want to meet like a yuppie, you can go to a buildings meeting. Any but your own. She notes, very important. You can't date a neighbor. You just can't. It'll ruin your life. I've personally never done it. I don't even think I've ever dated a man in my neighborhood. Have I? Oh, I did have a lover in my neighborhood in 2020, but that's different. And now he's abroad, but that was back when I lived downtown. I live in Midtown now, so God forbid. Because it's one thing for me to live in Midtown. You know, I'm just a girl. Everybody makes bad decisions, but that doesn't mean that I have to date somebody else who made the same questionable decision to live in Midtown. No, thank you. I'm all right. The next place is reunions, which is the same rule. You can't go to your own reunion. You have to go to somebody else's. She says it's because, I guess it ruins your pride to be rejected by somebody you went to high school with. But I just think, don't date somebody who knew you in high school. You don't want to be held or compared to who you were in high school. You don't want somebody who has a clear memory of the type of person you were at 16 years old. And God forbid expects you to be that way. Somebody who's like, you've changed. You're not listening to Melanie Martinez anymore. You're not wearing a very wrong shade of Dream Matte Mousse foundation. I don't know who you are anymore. The next location, oh, this is a great one. Emergency rooms. Here's what she advises. Overdose. Very carefully, after making arrangements for a good friend to come calling no more than 7 seconds after you ingest your drug of choice, in the ambulance or at the hospital, give your card to all doctors, residents, male nurses, or other personnel who look like potential dating material. There you go. Find yourself, did you guys watch Fleischman is in Trouble? I loved Fleischman is in Trouble. Even though I originally just watched it to see Jesse Eisenberg's butt, because normally I can't get into a drama show. I can get into a drama movie, but if I'm going to spend that much time with something, I need it to be funny, I need it to be light, but I can get into a limited series drama. By the way, speaking of, next week I need to talk about Daisy Jones and the Six, because the finale hasn't come out yet. But once it does, I'm sure I'll have many thoughts. I already do have many thoughts. I'm loving it. I have a lot of opinions, mostly about the hair, but whatever. Fleischman is in Trouble was a great one. It's about divorce. It has a bit of like a mystery aspect. It has a lot of morally gray characters. And my favorite part about it is that a big part of the plot is Jesse Eisenberg's character, Dr. Fleischman. He makes about $300,000 a year, I believe, but that is not enough. One of the problems in his marriage is that he's simply too poor for his wife and for their social circle. And he's like, I have a great job. I'm making good money. Why do we live in like one of the few neighborhoods on earth, the Upper East Side, where this is considered poor? And you know what? He has a great point. That is the Upper East Side for you. I'll meet people who grew up there who are like, I was made fun of because my family didn't have as much money. And I'm like, your family had a jet. But within those tiny little pockets of rich people, that's what's what there. The next way to meet a man is on a blind date, which is a great option. I can't say I go on many myself. I actually did go on my, okay, I've been on 2 blind dates in my life. So you might think like, oh, so you have lovely friends who wanted to set you up with someone and see if maybe there was a chance at love between you two. No, both of them were for some sort of audience. One of them was on stage at Soho House in front of a live audience, and the other was this past week in Washington Square Park. My girl Tiff Barra set me up on a blind date for TikTok. So those are the kind of blind dates that I've been on. And that one was pretty uncomfortable. We had to sit at a table in the park on a little date and then each get pulled aside and asked, like, would you go on another date with this person? And I was like, yeah, but I don't know if he'll say yes. So this is uncomfortable. And then, I mean, of course he did say yes, but can you imagine if he didn't? Jesus Christ. But blind dates are a great idea. I would recommend that you do one that isn't in public. I feel like I should try that sometime. Although, who's going to set me up with somebody just so I can find love? No, they're going to do it for content. Please. Another way to find a man is a little thing that Linda Sunshine calls surrogate dating, which is hiring a substitute person to date for you. They go on the date, they get to know the person, they report back. This sounds amazing. Not hiring a surrogate date, I would love to be the surrogate date. You get to have fun, you get to eat and drink, you get to make judgments about a person and then go back to someone and gossip about the judgments that you just made about them. There's no commitment. I mean, this sounds like what dating should be. And she also says, surrogates, if you want, can step in for fights or for uncomfortable talks, say about previous sexual history. So if anybody would like to hire me to fight with their boyfriend for them, I am available anytime, and I make strong arguments. I did speech and debate in high school, I'll have you know. Now let's talk about the first date. She has a little guide to getting ready for a date in under 6 hours. Now, this lists many, many activities, but I'm going to go ahead and tell you a few of my favorites. Turn on the Oprah Winfrey show. Go to the kitchen to get a tab. By the way, if you're a little young and you don't know, Tab was the original Diet Coke. Had a cult following, just like Diet Coke does now, but it was discontinued. I think the sweetener maybe caused a little bit of cancer, but, you know, what are you going to do? Call second best friend. Discuss what you should wear. Ask if you can borrow her new Ralph Lauren dress. Hang up when she weasels out of the request with the lame excuse that she's wearing that dress tonight. Decide you need an alternative second best friend. Plug in hot rollers, set hair with hot rollers, remove hot rollers and realize you left them in too long, wet hair to remove some of the curl, use curling iron to put back some of the curl. Apply 7 layers of lipstick until you look like you're not wearing any lipstick. And last but not least, answer phone, listen to date. Say, no problem, maybe we can do it another time. As for getting your apartment ready for a date, she recommends that you buy yourself fresh flowers. If he asks who sent the flowers, be demure and smile, then lie through your teeth. Say, just an old friend, sigh deeply. I will be trying this. There's nothing I love more than like having flowers that a man got for me and just being like, oh, sorry, a fella bought these for me. I remember once in my old place when I had a bunch of roommates. A guy that I was seeing, we got into a fight and he sent me like 2-3 dozen red roses, and I got it and I just put it on the table and I was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. This is just taking up so much space. I'm sorry. I wish he had gotten me less flowers. You know, I wish he had maybe just picked a few daisies, but he just had to get me dozens of red roses. This is so, I would bring them into my room, but I just don't have room. So they're going to have to be out here. Ugh. Love it. The best part of having flowers. Here's my favorite tip, of course. Remember that first impressions are important. To ensure that he'll like you, don't be yourself. Exactly. Exactly. Why be yourself? What's being yourself all about? What's next? Telling the truth when people at parties ask what you do for a living? Being yourself. Here's a fun activity. Okay, we're going to do this together. There are 4 questions that you should ask a man to get to know him. This is very like 80s pop psychology, but you know what? It might work. Let's go through these 4 questions. I'll do them myself right now. You can do them yourself and we'll find out what it means about us. Number 1, what is your favorite animal? Describe it in 3 adjectives. So my favorite animal, as you may know, is the humble monkey. I would describe it as smart, silly, and empathetic. Monkeys really care about other monkeys' feelings, and that's sweet. Okay. His favorite animal indicates how he feels about himself. Okay. So I think, what did I say? Smart, silly, empathetic? I don't know about empathetic. If he thinks of himself as a cute, cuddly, exotic koala bear, he's probably a nice guy to be with on Sunday morning. If his favorite animal is a slimy, poisonous killer snake, your immediate reaction might be, is there a back exit out of here? Next one. What is your favorite color? Describe it in 3 adjectives. My favorite color is red. I would describe it as sexy, spooky, and intense. His favorite color denotes the way he thinks others view him. If he describes his favorite color as warm, pleasing to the eye, and great on a sofa, you'll know he isn't threatened by you. Take your notice if he describes his favorite color as penetrating and piercing. I think that's just what I did. I do think people think of me as sexy, spooky, and intense. Good. What is your favorite body of water, such as ocean, lake, stream? Describe it in 3 adjectives. I would go with the ocean. I would say vast, mysterious, and I don't know, big. Big and vast. His favorite body of water is the most important category because this is how he views sex. Okay. My last boyfriend selected the ocean and described it as eternal, foamy, and smells good, which is as perfect a description of sex as I've ever come across. I guess I think of sex as big and mysterious. And you know what? Am I wrong? Last one. You are in an empty room with no openings, doors, windows, or furniture. Describe how this makes you feel in 3 adjectives. First of all, been there. But how would that make me feel? I would say trapped, claustrophobic, and scared. Finally, the white room is symbolic of your date's feelings about death. And here we get into the really heavy psychological stuff. Claustrophobic, frightening, and crazy are not uncommon answers. That's basically what I said. Frankly, I've never heard an answer to this question that didn't seem totally appropriate, except for a date who responded, like the inside of a refrigerator and how much is the rent? Honey, that's New York for ya. That's what this city will do to you. You see a padded room and a psychological television show, and it's like, Jesus Christ, that would be $3,500 here. So now that we've gotten to know our date, but really gotten to know ourselves, and learned that we think of sex as big, let's get into relationships themselves. She breaks down the difference between healthy and unhealthy relationships, which makes no sense to me. She says, in a healthy relationship, the man dates up the social ladder and the woman dates down, which I think is just every relationship, healthy or not. But after marriage, when the cheating starts, everybody dates down. The man dates his secretary, the woman dates the pool boy, whatever. She says that the American public was first exposed to a healthy relationship on one of my favorite sitcoms, That Girl from the 60s, where the main character, Anne Marie, dated her next-door neighbor, Don. Was he her next-door neighbor? I don't really remember that. Whatever. What really offended me was she said that the show was canceled due to its high boredom factor. Listen to me, Linda Sunshine. Anne Marie, in season 1, did not go on a stage and accept an award with a bowling ball on her toe for you to say it had a high boredom factor. How dare you? Let me describe this episode for the people who haven't seen it. So Anne Marie is an actress, and one of her, like, co-stars in a play is an actress who's about to receive an award, potentially, but she can't make it to the ceremony. So Anne Marie says, you know what? I'll go in your place. If you get the award, I'll accept it for you. But before that, she goes bowling, and she's at the bowling, what's it called? The bowling rink? The bowling, she's in the bowling establishment, and she goes, oh, looky here, it's a bowling magazine. I don't know. There was a magazine about bowling at the bowling place, I guess. She goes, okay, let me read this bowling magazine. Oh, here's a fun piece of information. Somebody just bowled a strike with their toe. And she says, you know what? I'm going to get my little toesies out, and I'm going to try that myself. And she tries to bowl with her toe, and guess what happens? You guessed it. Her toe gets stuck in the bowling ball. and they can't get it off. So they basically just chop the bowling ball in half. And then she goes to the ceremony anyway with half a bowling ball on her foot. And the actress wins the award. And she goes up and she accepts it with that bowling ball. And then get this irony. It comes off finally when she's on stage. Does that sound boring to you? That sounds like television to me. By the way, I won't get too far into this next part, but I just think this one part is ridiculously funny. There's a little chapter where she answers reader mail, and somebody writes in and they say, I have a boyfriend. His name is Jeff. He always talks about killing himself if I break up with him. He says he's going to jump out of a window. She also says for some reason he likes to dress up as a French maid and dust my bookshelves. She would be shaken by this new world because the men now, they're dressing up as French maids and they're not even dusting. All maid outfit, no actual cleaning skills, no help around the house, just a Party City costume. But she says, I'm dating this freak guy, Jeff, who says he's going to jump out of a window. And you know what? I am a hot and sexy pharmaceutical rep with great legs. And Linda Sunshine advises, open your windows and wear a miniskirt to the office. And then the next letter that's written in starts with, all throughout Jeff's funeral, I kept wondering, why do all my relationships end badly? I have nothing to say about that. It's just comedy brilliance. Anyway, let's talk about dating younger men. She advises, when you're dating younger men, or I guess just in general, it's better to be honest about your age, which I agree. I think there's a certain charm to people who lie about their age. I think lying about your age is kind of camp, but being truthful about your age is chic. And also, would you rather somebody be like, oh, you're older than I thought you would be? Or to be like, oh, you're so young. You look like shit. You look like Mia Goth in X, and not when she has the blue eyeshadow on. So I don't really think you should lie about your age, or just don't say. Have a little mystery there. I am a firm believer, however, that now in the modern era, we are all able to subtract 2 years from our age because of the pandemic. Like, I may have been born in 1999. I can't be held to 23-year-old standards. We were all locked up for 2 years. You expect me to be a 23-year-old? I am 21, just begun. I'm barely able to legally drink. She points out, correctly, that there were a lot of 40-year-old guys dating 18-year-olds. So there's really nothing wrong with dating a little bit younger as a woman. Not necessarily an 18-year-old, obviously. But also, plenty of female celebrities date younger men. Which, there's something about that dynamic that just makes so much sense to me. Like, of course, why would Cher be dating somebody her age? That makes no sense. I guess maybe because, like, a famous woman and, like, a younger, more naive fella, they might have similar priorities. Like, they care about their hair and their follower count. You know what I mean? Fame and youth. They both make you very shallow. So, Cher and whatever 25-year-old she's dating right now, it makes sense. And then there's a little quiz on if a man is too young for you. There's a few questions, and you want to be answering A to most of these, okay? Number one, is his idea for a great date A, movie and dinner, B, playing video games? Many of you should be taking notes. Two, when his mother calls, does she say, A, when are you coming to dinner? Or B, make sure my son wears his raincoat today? Although sometimes the wrong mom will say that to fully a 35-year-old. And that's why I don't date mama's boys, because they only like women who will do absolutely anything for them, and I will not do shit for them. Number three, is his favorite makeout music A, Johnny Mathis, B, Twisted Sister? This is a bit of the time. And four, does he think heavy metal is A, toxic, or B, easy listening music? Is everybody keeping count on your man? And now, of course, it isn't a dated book for single girls if we don't talk about dating married men. very Sex and the Single Girl, which this book does reference. And they critique Helen Gurley Brown a bit because she did start off Sex and the Single Girl by saying, like, there's nothing wrong with being single. There's nothing wrong with being a single girl. But also, listen to me, because I have a husband and houses and cars and all this and all that. So that presents the question, can married women offer single women good advice? And I think so. Here's the thing. I have gotten dating advice from all sorts of people. Married, unmarried, dating, single, divorced, widowed, mysteriously widowed after their husband's lifeless body was found at the end of a spiral staircase after he slept with his secretary. All sorts of women. And I trust a married woman specifically who had fun when she was single. Because they know a married woman who didn't have any fun when she was single is just going to be like, settle down, no fun, no club, no another club, no bus. Just find a boring guy who likes to watch TV with you and settle down. One who did have a little bit of single fun back in her day will tell you, like, have a blast. Don't be, you know, desperado. Marriage ain't all it's cracked up to be. That's why I trust Helen Gurley Brown. Because when she wrote Sex and the Single Girl, yeah, she wasn't a single girl. But when she was, she had a ball. Anyway, Linda lists out some perks for dating a married man. Of course, they're always trying to get us to do this. Okay, you never have to be nice to his mother. Wasn't planning on it. You'll always have an excuse for being depressed. That one was the only point where I was like, I kind of relate to that. How long have I been saying? I'll tell you, it's been a long time that I've been saying, I want to go through a terrible, terrible, no good, awful breakup because I want an excuse to, like, wallow around. I'm sick of doing it for no reason. For what? I want a man to come into my life and go, oh, you're sad? You're sad? I'll give you a reason to be sad. How about that? I think that might do me some good. What else? You'll have lots of free time during the weekends and around the holidays. Well, and lastly but not leastly, they might pay your shrink bills. That's my dream. That's the most romantic thing I could possibly think of. I mean, can you imagine? I don't want Cartier. I don't need Harry Winston. You know what I want? Is a $400 an hour psychiatrist. That's luxury, baby. That's the important things that money can buy. Because none of the good psychiatrists accept insurance. The one I have right now accepts insurance. It's $20 a session. I've been seeing him for 6 months. He calls me up, he goes, Serena, is it? I mean, Jesus, who needs jewelry and flowers? Now we're nearing the end of this book. It's pretty short. It's just over 100 pages. But of course, we have to talk about the last big topic, breaking up. Beginning by discussing ultimatums. Delivering an ultimatum, whether it's you gotta commit, you gotta divorce your wife, yeah, right. Carrie Fisher in When Harry Met Sally. It's never gonna happen. And it's noted that there are a few problems with ultimatums. First of all, they're often postponed until you forget why you even liked the guy in the first place. Also, sometimes there's a counter ultimatum. You say, leave your wife or I'll kill myself. And he says, Uno reverse card, if you kill yourself, I'll kill myself. I couldn't live without you. How's Mexican for dinner? And then, of course, you have to be like, all right, I won't kill myself. Can we do Thai, actually? You know? And also, ultimatums can be delivered one time too often, and then the relationship just falls apart. Which is true, you can't deliver an ultimatum more than once. An ultimatum that is delivered multiple times, that is just a plain old run-of-the-mill threat. A garden variety threat. Ultimatum? Ultimatum means 1 foot out the door. Bags packed. Ticket to an exotic location booked. New Hinge profile in the works. Now, there are 5 stages of dying from a broken heart. The first one, of course, is denial. This is when you tell yourself, I never really liked him. he was never that great. And then, you know, you convince yourself, oh, they're going to come back. Of course, as long as I'm chill about it, I can't really mourn this because then that means it's over. So I'm just going to say, oh, it's whatever. If he comes back, he comes back. And then, of course, he does not come back. So we move on to the next stage. Anger and depression. Temper tantrums. Banging your head against the wall. Pulling your hair out. Pulling other people's hair out. Kicking and screaming. Getting into some depression. You might sleep 18 hours a day. You might watch daytime television. I mean, hello, I've been through this without a breakup. 18 hours a day? Come on. Watching daytime television? Are you kidding me? Do you remember my Drew Barrymore show era? Not that it's fully over. I'll still click on a Drew Barrymore show clip if it's recommended to me, which it often is. But the fact that I got to a point in my life where I was just like listening to clips of the Drew Barrymore show throughout the day as if they were a podcast, and I hadn't even been through a breakup, that's talent, honestly. That's talent, that's committing to the bit, and that's staying true to myself, most importantly. The next stage is self-pity, which is similar to depression and might also come with a weight gain of 10 to 15 pounds. But this is when you become a little bit more verbal about it. You go out to drinks with your friends, you go, why does this always happen to me? You turn into that one friend who's always whining about that. And by the way, that one friend who's always like, this always happens to me, they just need something to happen once to say it always happens to them. I've had friends who are like, why do my relationships always end badly? And I'm like, this is literally the first time I've ever seen you in a relationship. And I've known you for 8 years. But then, of course, all of their relationships do start ending badly because they're telling themselves that. And you know what? The law of attraction, sometimes she spills. The next stage, you stop feeling hurt. You fall in love again. Or just otherwise, you get reborn. Maybe you go on a yoga retreat. Maybe you take up origami. Maybe you take up a new lover. Maybe you do ayahuasca. But then the hurt starts to go away a bit. And then next, you start thinking about hurting somebody else. You start fantasizing about revenge. The prime example that is cited is, of course, Nora Ephron writing Heartburn about her ex-husband. Iconic. Legendary. Can you imagine your husband cheats on you with, was she the daughter of the prime minister? British? British? And then you write a book about it, and not only that, the book gets made into a movie starring Meryl Streep and Jack Nicholson. Can you imagine a better revenge story? Because then people say the best revenge is living well, but sometimes living well also means getting actual revenge. That is truly the best revenge. The best revenge is Heartburn starring Meryl Streep and Jack Nicholson. And then once you get a sense of satisfaction from your revenge phase, whether you actually go through with some sort of vengeful plan or you just think about it a lot, once you're satisfied, then you recover. And finally, we have how to wash that man right out of your hair without getting split ends. Have you guys heard that song? I'm gonna wash that man right out of my hair. Legendary. Great breakup song. Simple, beautiful. Here's how you wash that man right out of your hair. First of all, you say, I should have married Roger. Now, Roger was a nice guy that Linda Sunshine once dumped for an insurance salesman that she met on a drunken night out. But Roger was very nice, very sweet to her, wanted to marry her, and now it's a comforting thought. Okay, there's somebody out there that wanted to marry me, that was nice to me. And honestly, this does help. I'm thinking of a few men in my head who are kind of Rogers, where I'm like, if I wanted somebody nice to commit to, that totally could have happened. It didn't. And I'm so glad it didn't. Because a couple of them, you know, if I would have actually married them, I probably would have killed myself. But it's always an option. Men like that are always out there. It's a nice thought. Next, you want to get rid of everything that reminds you of him. You get what she calls a grief case, which could be a briefcase, a suitcase, a makeup bag. I guess it depends how much stuff of his you have. It could be like a coin purse or a mint tin. And you put in all the notes and the gifts and the matchbooks from the restaurants you went to and the sweatshirts he gave you, all that kind of stuff. You have a little grief case. And then you grieve. You spend 24 hours wallowing, playing all the music that reminds you of him. You go through all the items in your grief case. You go, oh, this matchbook. I remember when we went to this restaurant and I got a matchbook out of a bowl. What a beautiful memory. She says, you will consider suicide, and then remember you haven't yet worn those fabulous Joan and David red high heels, so you still have something worth living for. That is a mantra. Anytime I'm feeling real down, I'm like, you know what? I have that sequined bell sleeve mini dress, and I haven't found an occasion to wear it yet. So I can't give up on life. I was going to pair it with patent leather platform pumps. What am I supposed to give up on that look? And the silver hoops and the teased hair? Honestly, if I was designing like a suicide prevention something, if somebody was like prone to suicidal thoughts, I would send them like a special pair of shoes or a bag that could only be worn to a very special event. Not something that they could just wear out the next day and then like go home and kill themselves. But something where they'd have to wait for a very special party. And then they can live for that. I mean, there you go. I feel like I'm talking a lot about suicide this episode. Whatever. Linda Sunshine started it. She then advises you to modify your behavior. Every time he comes into your mind, run into the kitchen and start chopping an onion. You put your face really close to it and you chop for 10 minutes straight. And then, of course, naturally, you bring the onions, knife, and cutting board with you everywhere. This way you punish yourself every time you think of him. You have to, like, cry into an onion for 10 minutes, basically. This is kind of like when you keep a hair tie on your wrist and you kind of slap yourself with it every time you think of something. But this is more theatrical, which is what I like about it. And what's fun is that this ruins everybody else's day. Snapping a hair tie on your wrist will only cause pain to you, but cutting onions, the whole subway car will be in shambles. And then the last stage in washing a man right out of your hair is getting rid of split ends. You cut your losses, you go back to the How to Call a Man for a Date section of the book, which I don't think I went through, but really the only tip in there was calling a man for a date is sort of like inserting a diaphragm, and I didn't really know what that means. But then you start over, moveon.org. And that, I didn't have the book open, but let me close it for dramatic effect. And that is Women Who Date Too Much. And Those Who Should Be So Lucky by Linda Sunshine. That was a fun book. What did we learn? What did we learn? Okay, watching the Mary Tyler Moore Show is bad for your dating life. Don't be yourself. Date younger guys, but not if their idea of a date is playing video games. And once you break up, wash that man right out of your hair. I love this book. Honestly, I feel like more humorous books like this have more truth in them than the very serious books about dating or about whatever. Because those will be like, in order to love someone else, you must love yourself, which is, I mean, that's true, but what does that even mean? Like, it's kind of giving advice that means nothing. You know what is advice that means something? Meet a man at a high school reunion, but not your own. That's practical. That you can do something with. So I've certainly acquired some wisdom from this fabulous book, and I hope you have too. Thank you for listening to this very special book club episode of Let Me Ruin Your Life. I have to go study for a test, which is so annoying. What am I, 14? God, I totally forgot when I decided to, like, go back to school for a few classes that I would actually have to, like, show up to them and then, like, take the tests. It feels, frankly, juvenile, but I gotta do it. I gotta go do it anyway. So I will talk to you guys next time. Bye.